Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Coming to you from Classic City,
the capital of the Bulldog Nation.
It's time for another edition of the podcast designed for the most die-hard Georgia fans in the country.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another edition of the Glory UGA podcast brought to you by our great friends at MyBookie. By the time you are listening to this episode, there's a really good chance the NCAA tournament has already started, but that does not mean that it is too late for you to get in on all of the action this March. Just go to mybookie.ag, use our promo code UGA, and you can still jump in on everything that's going on in the NCAA tournament, and you can get a 50% bonus on top of all that with your first deposit if you're a new user. So again, mybookie.ag, promo code UGA. Hey, all right, guys, I am your host, Tyler, and today I'm going to call a little bit of an audible here. I had something else planned for today's show, but I know all of you by now, I'm sure, have heard the news. We have our opponents for the 2025 season, our SEC opponents for the 2025 season. So with that coming out, I have some thoughts on that. There are things to really like about this SEC slate in 2025, some things to get really excited about. But on the flip side, there are also some things that are a little bit of a bummer, at least for me personally. So I wanted to dive into that today, give you guys some quick instant reaction thoughts, and maybe talk a little Georgia basketball at the tail end of today's episode. But let's go ahead and dive into this schedule release. It's not much of a release. There really were no surprises here. This is something that I entirely anticipated. I was hoping I was wrong, though, but nope, nailed it. This is one of those things I did not want to be right about, but yep, I was right about this one. They are just flipping our 2024 SEC schedule in 2025. So whoever we are playing at home this year, we're playing on the road next year. Whoever we're playing on the road this year, we are playing them at home next year. Now, before I dive too much into this and get on my soapbox, which it's not much of a soapbox today, maybe a half-size soapbox. Before I do that, I do want to make sure to put this disclaimer out there that my perspective on this is very much my perspective on it. And I say that just to make sure everyone understands, I'm not saying that I'm right. I don't think this is a right or wrong thing. This is a preference thing. So what I'm about to say about this SEC slate in 2025, you might very well not agree with. You might think I'm making too much of it. This is really nothing to overreact about. I promise you, I'm not trying to overreact about it. There's just a part of this that's kind of a downer for me. It's kind of a letdown. It's not the end of the world, but it's a little bit of a letdown for me. I thought this was what they were going to do, but I was hoping that I would be wrong. But again, this is just me. This is a me thing. I don't want to say that this is unique to me, because I think that there are other people that share these thoughts, and I've heard from some of you on social media in the past 5-6 hours today. But I am looking at this from a different perspective than maybe the average Georgia fan is, and that's not a slight on anyone else. I'm not saying that I'm any better or worse of a Georgia fan. Like, I'm not into comparing who's a better fan. Like, that's not what this is. This is just the perspective of someone who travels to all of the games, home games, road games. I go to all of the games. So my perspective on how the schedule shakes out is colored by that, is very much informed by that context. So if you're someone out there who's like, I don't care that we're playing Mississippi State and Auburn on the road, like, who cares about that? I totally get that. I respect it. If you're not going to Auburn, if you're not going to Starkville, I totally get that. You're probably saying, well, like, going to Starkville, like, that's an easy win, right? I get that. I can respect it. But as someone who travels to these games, I like to go to places that are fun to go to, cool places. And that's all I'm saying here. This is just the way I look at it based on what I do in the fall. But before I get into all that, I do want to quickly run through my thoughts on why the SEC is just flipping the 2024 SEC schedule and not like giving us entirely different opponents. Because some of you have reached out and asked me, like, why are they doing this? Well, first off, let me just say, it is lazy. This is a very lazy way. It's an easy way out, is what this is. This was just simply the easiest thing for the SEC to do to put together a schedule for 2025. And I get why they did not want to put too much effort and go too deep into the weeds and put together a 2025 schedule when they just did this last year for 2024. I understand because there's a lot of moving parts in the landscape of college football right now. Are we going to be able to get more money out of Disney / ESPN as a conference if we go to a 9-game schedule? Which that is a big part of why we did not go to a 9-game conference schedule for this coming year. The other part of it was there's a divide in the SEC between the haves and the have-nots. The haves are not concerned really about playing an extra conference game if it means more money because we're going to win most of those games. Like, oh, okay, you're going to add Mississippi State to our schedule? Oh, we're so scared. Oh, you're going to add Arkansas to our schedule? Oh, we're so scared. Like, we're fine with it. But if you're Mississippi State, if you're Arkansas, if you're Vanderbilt, and really your goal every year is just to get bowl eligible, like that's what determines if you had a successful year or not. Well, playing an extra conference game and taking away being able to play like a Southeast Louisiana, which is an automatic bye win, taking that game off your schedule and replacing it with an SEC game, well, that all of a sudden makes it a lot more difficult for you to be able to get the bowl eligibility. And if those teams don't get the bowl eligibility, then what happens? People get fired, right? Coaches get fired. ADs get fired. Fans get angry. They want heads on platters. Like, that's what happens. So the have-nots have always kind of pushed back on the idea of going to a 9-game schedule unless there's like significantly more money attached to it, because money solves all the problems, right? Because they want to make sure they get to bowl eligibility and keep their fans off their backs. Programs like Georgia and Alabama and LSU, for the most part, programs like that really have had no issue whatsoever with the 9-game schedule. It's kind of just like, whatever, like, just tell us when to show up and we're playing. It doesn't matter. But waiting to see if Disney / ESPN is going to pony up more cash for more SEC inventory, that's been a big part of this equation. And who knows how that's going to work out? Because we know, like, you know, Disney, ESPN, like, have not been exactly on solid financial footing. And maybe that's a little bit of a stretch. They have not been on as solid of a financial footing as they have in the past. ESPN's actually about to roll out a direct-to-consumer streaming option. It's apparently, allegedly, going to cost like $25 to $30 a month. So there's a lot of changing in, like, even just at the television network landscape. But now that we're, like, entirely married to ESPN, like, the direction they're heading in and what their financials look like, are they going to be able to afford to give us more money for a 9-game conference schedule and more SEC games, more of an SEC inventory? That's a big part of this, and we're kind of still playing wait and see there. The other part of this is what's going on in terms of realignment. You guys, I know, you already saw it this week, that Clemson has followed Florida State in filing suit against the ACC, against their own conference, for the express purpose of getting out of the conference. At this point, look, I'm not an expert on these things, but it's pretty clear what's going to happen. It's a matter of time. It's a matter of when, not if, Florida State and Clemson get out, and when the ACC really just essentially falls apart. And there might be something called the ACC, but it won't be the ACC that we've come to know over the years. So waiting to see how that shakes out. You don't want to go to a 9-game schedule and like redo and go through all the effort, the trouble of redoing your entire conference schedule for 2025. Then, oh, like, well, here's Florida State, here's Clemson. I'm not saying they're going to be in the SEC as soon as 2025. That seems a bit aggressive, but it's also possible. So you want to see how that plays out. And even if they're not in 2025, maybe it's 2026, maybe it's 2027. So maybe you want to continue to push out when you're going to go to this like consistent like rotation of games and like when you're going to play all these different teams on a year-by-year-by-year basis. Which, you know, because allegedly the idea is we want to be able to have a conference setup where every team will be able to play every other team in the conference twice, home and away, within a 4-year span. But at the end of the day, what I believe is really driving this decision to just flip-flop the 2024 and 2025 SEC schedules is the SEC trying to buy time. They're trying to buy time to get more of a feel for all of these moving parts for the very rapidly changing landscape of college athletics. I mean, the CFP is, we know it's changing this year, but it looks like it's probably going to be changing in a couple of years again to 14 and then maybe 16, then who knows how many teams. So I think they want to get a grasp on all of these things, let all these things play out, let all these crazy moving pieces eventually settle into like a much clearer picture. And then once they have that clearer picture, then you can go about making a long-term decision on what your long-term SEC schedule rotation is going to be. So I fully understand where they're coming from. I'm not saying they're crazy for doing this. I'm not saying that they're even really necessarily doing anything wrong. Again, I'm just telling you from my perspective, there are things I do love about it. Don't get me wrong, we'll get to that in a second. But there are some aspects to it that frustrate me. But let's get to the good stuff. Let's start there. Let's start with the positive. Let's start with the good stuff. When you look at what our SEC home schedule will be next year, it is hands down, by far, no questions asked, the best home schedule we've had in a long, long, long time. The best home schedule that we've had since I've been a season ticket holder, dating back to like when I graduated college back in 2007. I mean, just having Alabama and Texas at home, those two teams in and of themselves being inside Sanford Stadium, that alone makes it one of the best, if not the best, home schedules that we've had, like maybe in my lifetime, at least that I can remember as being like a conscious fan going to all these games. And then Kentucky, you know, Kentucky's whatever. They're a solid program. And then Ole Miss. Like, Ole Miss, it remains to be seen what they are going to be next year because they're kind of a year-to-year team with a transfer portal. Jackson Dart will be gone next year. So we'll see what their team is, how their team is structured and how good they're going to be. But you have to imagine with Lane Kiffin there and how they have attacked the portal and been so successful getting big-time players out of the portal and building their team that way, that Ole Miss will probably be, at the very least, a good football team next year. And of course, Lane and Kirby being buddies, that kind of adds a layer of intrigue of sorts to that. It's, and it'll be the third time that we played them in 3 years. So I don't want to say it's going to be a rivalry, but it'll be kind of an interesting thing seeing Georgia and Ole Miss play three consecutive years. And that home schedule next year, that conference home schedule next year, is an especially welcome sight when you consider the criminally poor home schedules that we've had over the past couple years. I mean, this past year, UT Martin, Ball State, South Carolina, I know that's a kind of a rival of sorts, but I mean, they didn't make a bowl last year. UAB, like, get out of here with that. Who cares? Kentucky, yeah, fine, whatever. Missouri, that ended up being a good game, but how often is Missouri a premier opponent inside Sanford Stadium? It was a good game this year. We'll give them that. Ole Miss, it was fun to have a team that we don't normally have in Athens here this year, but typically that's not your premier opponent. But I mean, last year, we had three bye games. We had Ball State, UAB, and UT Martin. And then conference games, got Kentucky, fine, whatever. Missouri, Ole Miss, ended up being good games. Ole Miss wasn't a good game, but it was a fun game. So good opponents. There was a good buildup to those games. And then South Carolina, which is basically a giant yawn at this point. And if you go back to 22, it was even worse. Samford, Kent State, yeah, we had Auburn. That was a terrible Auburn team. Vanderbilt, I mean, dear God, like, I have to pay to watch that. Tennessee, that was a massive game. That one was awesome. That kind of saved the home schedule, like that in and of itself. But the rest of the home schedule, Georgia Tech, the rest of the home schedule was garbage. Like, we had one good, appealing game at home in Athens inside Sanford Stadium back in 2022. And you also have, you know, 22 and then this year, not so much last year, but in 24, like, we play these opening non-conference games at a neutral site in Atlanta. And that's not a home game. I mean, it's close enough. Yeah, it's in Atlanta. You can call it a de facto home game, but it's not in Athens. It's not in Sanford Stadium. That's not a home game. It is a neutral site. So when we lose games like that to a neutral site, you don't get Oregon at home. You don't get Clemson at home. I know we're going to play Clemson at home in the future, but not this year. Well, that detracts from the home schedule. So that is why seeing Alabama and Texas on the home schedule in 2025, that's a very welcome sight. So that is a positive to this news about the 2025 schedule. I'm happy about that. Trust me, as a season ticket holder who cannot stand these bye games, you guys know how I feel about that. I've made no secret about it. I understand why we have to do the bye games. We don't have to. I understand why we choose to do the bye games and how that helps fund the programs that we play and gives kids opportunities to go on scholarship and play football and continue their career into college. I get that. I understand the somewhat noble intentions behind it, but from a fan's perspective, which let's not make us out to be anything other than what we are. We are fans. I am a fan. From a fan's perspective, I don't care about watching us play Samford. I go because that's what I do. I can't do anything else. Like, I know, yeah, I have the choice. And that's what people would say, Tyler, you have the choice to not go. No one's making you go. No one's holding a gun to your head. Yeah, I get it. But see, here's the thing, guys. I am afflicted with this thing called fandom. And I know that everyone's version of fandom is different. Everyone's version of fandom is not my version of fandom. And that's great. Do what works for you. But I like to go to the games. And I structure my life in a way that allows me to go to all of the games. And so when I'm paying for it, I do not care about watching Georgia play Samford. I do not care about watching Georgia play Tennessee Tech. I go, they've got me hooked, and that's why they do it. They know they can get away with it. People are still going to come. There's a few empty seats here and there, but people still buy the tickets. Someone's paying for them. Even the stadium's not full. They're sold out, right? The tickets are bought, so the university, the athletic department's getting the money, and we get a win. Guys that don't get to play get to play, get to develop. So it's whatever. Like, for the university, for the athletic department, for the football team, it's kind of like a win-win for them. I know it's not going to change. Like, that's just, unless there's some drastic change in the landscape of college football, which, hey, you know, things are changing a mile a minute, so it could change. Who knows? But I get frustrated by that. So we've had a really crappy run of home schedules in recent years. So it's really nice to actually have a nice, solid home schedule. And no, that's not accurate. It's more than a nice, solid home schedule. It is a spectacular home schedule when you have Alabama and Texas, and you throw in Ole Miss, Kentucky in there. That is a spectacular home schedule. Yeah, we still have Austin Peay and Charlotte thrown in there, but I can forgive those games when you also give me Alabama and you give me Texas. So yes, I do love that aspect of it. I want to start with the good news, the good aspects of it, the positive aspects of it. But let's get to why I'm frustrated with this. And look, I'm not mad at the SEC. I understand why they're doing it. This is just me, Tyler, from my perspective as somebody who travels these games. I am frustrated on two fronts here. And nobody cares. I get it. Nobody cares. But I have this podcast, so I'm just going to share my thoughts, right? Our road schedule next year includes trips to Mississippi State, Auburn, and Tennessee. Those are our three road games next year. Now, a lot of you probably look at that from the standpoint of, like, well, that should be two wins, right? At Auburn, maybe they'll be a little bit better next year, but we should win that game. We've owned them, right? At Mississippi State, that's definitely a win. So, like, how can you be frustrated with that? Well, again, this is just me. It's my perspective. I don't expect everyone to agree with me. I'm just telling you my thoughts here. Start with Mississippi. Sucks. Like, that's just the reality, guys. Like, it's not a good town. It's a college town. I respect it for that, okay? I do like going to games on college campuses. I'd actually rather go to Starkville than Atlanta. Being dead serious. I'd rather go to Starkville because it's a legit college town on a legit college campus in a legit college stadium. And that is the college experience to me. Neutral sites are like antiseptic to me. Get those out of my face. But even though it is a college town, it does have that going for it. Starkville is like Nowhereville, USA. And a lot of college towns are. And I don't mean to hate on Starkville. I know that people that live there love it, and that's great. But as someone, you know, an opposing fan traveling to your town, there's not a whole lot going on. Restaurants, bar scene, not much to speak of. That might not be your thing, but that's kind of what I like to do when I go to these towns. Go to a nice restaurant, find some cool bars, you have a good time on Friday night, you have a good time in the lead up to the game, and you go to the game, right? That's kind of like what I do when I go to these towns. That's me, again, just me. And Starkville doesn't really give you much of that. There's also not really anywhere to stay. Like, finding like decent lodging is difficult when you're talking about Starkville, Mississippi. So what do I do when we go to Starkville? I typically stay in Tuscaloosa, but that only really works if Alabama doesn't have a home game. Because if Alabama has a home game, I mean, you're going to be paying $1,500, $2,000 a night for a hotel in Tuscaloosa. We stay in Tuscaloosa because it's only like an hour away from Starkville, so it's not that far to drive. I hate having to get up and drive in the morning. I don't love that, but I'd rather do that. Stay in Tuscaloosa, which is not like the best college town, but it is a better college town with more options, more things to do, more entertainment options than Starkville. So stay there, and you drive into Starkville the day of the game, and you know, go find somewhere, hang out, tailgate, all that kind of stuff. But if Alabama has a home game that same weekend, that all of a sudden is not an option. So it becomes logistically problematic. And then Auburn, you guys know how I feel about Auburn. It's only like slight shades better than Starkville. There's just not a whole lot there. It's a really nice campus, a beautiful campus. They've got a lot of nice, new, beautiful buildings that they basically have gone into massive debt building. But they're nice. It's a pretty campus. I will certainly give them that. And it is a college town. Okay, I can respect that. But it's not a great college. I don't like Starkville. It's small. There's not a lot of good restaurants. There's like two good restaurants. I really do like Acre. But, I mean, that's where, like, those two restaurants, everybody wants to go. So it's really hard to get a seat and actually eat when you're there overnight. And then, like, there's also, like, Starkville, there's not a ton of hotel options in a place like Auburn. And when there's not a lot of hotel options, they drive the prices up dramatically, especially for a game like Georgia, the way our fans travel. And obviously the rivalry and the close nature of these two teams. They drive the prices up, and supply and demand does its thing, and it's like, wow, I'm paying out the freaking butt for Auburn, Alabama. It kind of becomes hard to swallow. Then the other options, you drive in. I mean, that's fine. It's what I've started to do recently, last couple of trips, and that's like, you can do that, but it's like, it's kind of a downer. Like, I get up extra early, drive up there. You get there a couple hours for the game. You go to the game, you drive back, and you miss all the other games that are being played. And, you know, for me, again, for my preferences, what I like to do, it's not ideal. It's not ideal. Now, like I said earlier, I know no one is holding a gun to my head saying, Tyler, you have to go. But again, my retort to that would be, I can't physically bring myself to not go. Like, it's the, I just can't. I've tried, guys. Like, I don't want to go to this place, but I can't. I've had like situations where like I planned to not go. I'm just not going to go this year. I'm not going to go there. But as the game gets closer and closer and closer, it's like, oh my God, I can't like stomach the thought of not going. So yeah, I have a sickness. I do. I have a sickness called fandom. I am legitimately sick in the head. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. I have a lot of self-awareness. I know. I know there's something wrong with me. I am the weird one. And then Tennessee, like, I don't mind Knoxville. I like Knoxville. It's solid. It's a solid college town. Some solid bars, solid restaurants. So downtown area has been growing since I've started going, you know, 15 or so years ago. It's gotten better. And I like going to the stadium. I'm Neyland Stadium like an Erector set. It's what it is. It is something. But it's fun because they're so into it, right? And I love that. I love the college environment. That's why I love going. It's the energy that you get in a massive college ball environment like that is unlike anywhere else. Like, I cannot get that feeling anywhere else. Like, that specific feeling. You don't get anywhere else. The vibe, the buzz in the air, the energy just flowing through you. You don't get it really anywhere else, which is why I'm addicted to it. So, I like Tennessee. It's a solid place. Now, last year was, astronomically priced. We're talking like, I can't stomach the price. It's just crazy. And it's never been that way. So, this past year, hotels were literally 6 times more expensive in Knoxville than when we went in 2021. And that is not a joke, guys. Like, I am not making it up. That's not hyperbole. Like, that's the straight up truth. Now, part of that was Georgia as a 2-time defending national champion being in town. But if you looked at the rates and other home weekends in Knoxville, it didn't matter who they were playing. It was essentially the same rates at all these hotels. And that's a function of Tennessee being good now. Their fans care. And I hate Tennessee fans. I hate them. But I respect them for that. They love their program. They're passionate about it. And when they're good, people want to come. So it builds the excitement around town. And the hotel prices get driven up. They hadn't been good in a while. So the hotel prices were kind of depressed. And I love that. But now it's a little bit more expensive. But like that, you know, that's something you got to deal with. But anyway, for me, from my perspective, those 3 games being our 3 road games is frustrating. Because like it's not all that exciting. Tennessee, again, I like Tennessee. It's solid. So that's not the worst place. But having to go to Auburn and to Mississippi State in the same year, and like you don't get a trip to like Columbia, Missouri, which I love, or get a trip to Lexington, which I really enjoy going. I'm excited about going there this year, or a trip to, a place we've never gotten a chance to go to, like College Station, Texas. It's frustrating because I've been wanting, like, we had this schedule, right? We had this rotation when they initially added Missouri and A&M, and we were supposed to go to A&M the last year of that 12-year rotation. Well, when we got to that point, well, the conference has expanded again. And so we push off Georgia going to A&M all over again. And look, I'm not saying College Station's a great college town. People that I've gone to, I've gotten mixed reviews on it, but I just want to experience myself. Whether somebody likes it or doesn't, I don't know. I want to experience myself. And I was really excited about going there in 2024, which is when we were supposed to go. I've been waiting for a long time to experience something new, like Kyle Field, the Midnight Yell, all of that. I want to experience that because I'm a college guy. That's like a quintessential college thing. Like, come on, let's go. Let's do that. Let's see the Yell Leaders in like their milkman costumes. Like, let's go. Come on. I want that. That's what I live for, that kind of stuff. And for us to have to push that back to like an undetermined date, like who knows? I mean, we'll go there at some point, I think, probably, maybe. That's what they tell me. But at this point, I'm not going to believe until it actually happens. So that's frustrating for me. All right. So again, I don't expect you to like feel sorry for me. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just like, it's frustrating to see this. And also, here's the other thing. There are a number of places that we'd never get to go. Like Baton Rouge. The last time we've been to Baton Rouge is 2018. When's the last time we were in Fayetteville, Arkansas for a game that was not COVID? That was not COVID. Trivia time on that. When's the last time? You might know? Yeah, well, if you guess 2009, you're right. 2009. So let's do the math here. It's going to be 2025. Last time we were there is 2019. That's what, 16 college football seasons that we have not played a non-COVID game where people could actually go to the game in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I know we played Arkansas on the road in 2014, but let's not forget that was Little Rock. That was not Fayetteville. So I'm not saying Fayetteville is an awesome amazing college town, but it's something different, something I don't get to experience all that often. So I would love to go there. I would love to go to Baton Rouge again. Again, that's a place, like, it's wild, it's crazy, but the last time that we got to go there, 2018, prior to that, the last time we played in Baton Rouge was in 2008. And the last time before that was 2003. So when we get to 2025, we will have played in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in a regular season game, a grand total of 3 times. In that, what, 23-year span? A&M has been in the conference since 2012. We've played them how many times? 1. How many times has Florida played them? We've already played them 4. By the time we get through the 2025 rotation, Florida will have played A&M 6 freaking times. We played them 1. I'm just asking for a little variety. Let me experience some things I don't get to experience all that often. That's part of what makes college football fun. And by the way, that's one of the express purposes you say that, like, when you're trying to you eliminate divisions and you want to do this rotation, you want all these teams to be able to play each other on a more consistent basis. Well, if that's indeed one of the things that you're going for, and that's one of the driving forces behind what you're trying to do with your scheduling in the future, why are we not switching up a little bit here in 2025? I know it's just easier for you to just say, oh, we're going to flip-flop it to 2025. That's easy for the SEC to do. But is that, like, what's best for the fans? I mean, yes, we get Texas and Alabama at home. That's great. But, like, we're playing the same teams. I mean, we're playing Ole Miss 3 years in a row. I mean, yeah, we don't normally get to play them that much, but play them 3 times in a row. We just went to Starkville back in 2022. So we're going to go to Starkville 2 out of 3 years? Again, let me go back to Baton Rouge. We never get to go there. Let me go to Fayetteville. We never get to go there. I've literally never had the opportunity to go watch Georgia play at College Station, in College Station. That's, like, come on. That's what I want. That's why I'm frustrated. And I know eventually we will play in those places again. I understand that. I know it will happen. We'll play in 2026 and 2027. We'll play all the teams that we're not playing now. We'll play them then. I get that. But that's further off. Like, I'm a human, man. I can't help it. I'm looking, like, down the road next year, and it's like, man, I really want to go to these other places, and I don't get to. So I know this is me just, like, venting and whining, and you're probably like, dude, just shut up. And hey, I respect you for that. But that's how I feel. I try to be authentic on this show and give you my true, unfiltered, authentic thoughts. And those are my true, unfiltered, authentic thoughts on the 2025 schedule. I'd also add this. I don't think it's like it. I don't know how you can do it completely fair. In college football, there's no such thing as fairness. Like, it's inherently unfair. As a sport, inequity is inherent in the sport. That's the best way to say it. Inequity is inherent in the sport. Like, it's just part of the fabric of college football. So there's no way you can get to total fairness. It's just, there's too many teams. There's too many moving parts. I understand that it's never going to be perfect, but I don't love the scheduling inequities, because you guys know our schedule is very difficult this year, right? Who are we to complain? Last year, I don't want to say it was a cakewalk. Missouri and Ole Miss ended up being very good football teams, but it was not, like, murderer's row, to say the very least. But this year, we're getting that back in spades. We could be playing on the road very legitimately against 3 top 10 teams in Ole Miss, Bama, and Texas. Playing all three of those, not just playing all three of those teams, playing all three of those teams on the road. It's a very difficult schedule. And we're going to play all those teams again next year. Now, who's to say they'll be great again in 2025? You're talking about Texas. You're talking about Alabama. Alabama's been great for a long time. We obviously know Saban's moving on. They're not going to fall off the face of the earth. Are they going to be what they were, the machine? Probably not, but still going to be really good. They're still a really talented team. And you got Texas, who's on the ascent. They're on the rise. That is an ascending program. And Ole Miss is also an ascending program. Yes, we get all three of them at home next year, which makes it less strenuous of a schedule, but we still have to play all three of those teams, and those are three of the better teams in the league. And I know when they tried to balance out these schedules, they took a 10-year win average, but that, to me, goes way too far back in time. Like, what happened 9-10 years ago? Why is that relevant to right now? I think it should be in a much more narrow period of time, like a 2-4 year win average. I think that would give you a much better picture of how good these teams are. So a team like Georgia, like, we have to play all these tough teams. Our schedule is going to be tough again next year. Less difficult because we get a lot of the tougher teams at home, but it's still going to be difficult. And you look at a team like Texas, yes, they have to play us this year. They have to play us next year. They have to come to Georgia, come play in Sanford Stadium next year, and that will be tough for them. But look at the rest of Texas's schedule. I mean, you could not have been given a more welcoming first-year schedule in the SEC. I mean, they rolled the red carpet out for them. Yeah, they play Oklahoma, but how good is Oklahoma right now under Brent Venables? But that's a neutral site. You have to come to Georgia. But this year, they're playing – they play at Vanderbilt this year. Ooh, that's a tough road game. Their other road game is at Arkansas, then at A&M. At A&M is going to be tricky. But then you get Kentucky at home. You get Florida at home. You get Georgia at home. So next year, what is Texas going to have? They're going to be at Georgia. They're going to be at Florida. And they're going to be at Kentucky. Who they get at home? A&M, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and Oklahoma neutral site. That's 2 years in a row that Texas gets a pretty cushy schedule. And we're not the only team. Like, Bama has a tough draw this year. They'll have a less tough draw next year because they'll get more of those teams at home, but they still have to play some tough teams. So there are teams that have cushy schedules this year and teams that have tougher draws, and that will be largely the same next year because you're playing the same teams. Now, we know it's college football, so there's always attrition, there's always turnover, so some things will change, but like if you're playing Texas, if you're playing Alabama, we can just go out on a limb and say those teams are going to be good next year. So I do think there's some scheduling inequity with just flipping it like that, but that was the easiest way for the SEC to do it. It was the least cumbersome way. It was the easy way out, and they took the easy way out as they are trying to buy time to see how the college football landscape is changing so they can make a much more informed long-term decision on what the scheduling format should be for the SEC moving forward. But all right, guys, enough of me talking about the schedule and giving you some insight into my just completely insane brain. Before we move on, I do want to remind you guys about our wonderful friends at Alumni Hall. You guys know we love Alumni Hall. I mean, they've been so good to us over the years. And not only that, every time we go in there, they have something brand new that I haven't seen before and that, you know, you just kind of have to have. And I know you guys are big-time Georgia fans just like I am. And once you walk in there, like every Georgia fan, like you're in paradise. So if you're looking for some Georgia gear, Georgia accessories, whether it's something you want to wear, whether it's something you want to show off on your car, at home, in the office, Alumni Hall is your go-to place, guys. If everything you could possibly want, and even more beyond that, things that you didn't even know that you could want, they're going to have all that stuff, best brands, best selection, best prices, best customer service, best of everything. So stop in today here in the Classic City, inside the Edgebridge Shopping Center, or online at alumnihall.com, because Alumni Hall is where the Bulldogs shop.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, guys, before we get out of here today, I do want to just run through some quick thoughts on Georgia basketball, the NIT. I know a lot of you, if you are into Georgia basketball, which I hope is a lot of you out there, watch that game, and you were probably very frustrated, just like I was. We get out to, what, a 23-point lead, make a nice run in the second half. We were leading basically the entire first half, and only to watch, as we have watched so often this year, we watch our team systematically give that lead away, and almost, this time we didn't blow it. Every other time this year we've had a big lead like that, we have blown it. This time, we tried. We made every effort possible to blow that game, but we finally hung on at the very end and won that game by a bucket. But look, guys, I'm not even mad. I was frustrated in the moment. Absolutely. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. It's like, oh my God, here we go again. Why is it the same story over and over? I was frustrated just like you were. But as soon as the clock ticked zero, and it was a wild finish there, right? But as soon as the clock ticked zero and George was on top by two, was it 78, 76? All the frustration went out the window. It was relief. It was excitement. It was, I don't know if it was quite euphoria. We are talking about the first round of the NIT, so I can't say I was euphoric, but I was certainly very excited. I know what we're talking about here. I know this is the National Invitational Tournament and not the NCAA tournament. I know this is the NIT, and this is not the big show. This is the sideshow. But quite frankly, I do not care. It has been a long time since Georgia has played in the postseason, and it's been a long time since we've won a postseason game of any sort. I know it's not the postseason we all want to be in. We all want to be in the big dance. But when you haven't been in the postseason of any kind since 2017, I will take it. I will take it. When you haven't won a postseason game of any sort since 2016, when we beat Belmont 9-384 in the first round of the NIT, I will take it. Guys, 2016, that was a while ago, okay? Eight seasons ago is the last time we won a postseason game of any sort. And there have been a lot of hard times. We bottomed out, guys, six wins a couple years ago. We have bottomed out as a program, and it got to the point where I didn't know if we'd ever get out of it. And we're still not there yet, but we're starting to crawl out. We're starting to poke our heads up out of the sand. We see a little sunlight. And winning a game like that against a, I know Xavier was not good this year, but that's a proud basketball program. That is a good basketball program. It's a down year for them. Like I told you guys earlier in the week, the guy was probably going to be one of the, he was certainly going to be one of the, if not their best players on their team, in Zach Fremantle. He's a really good big guy. He missed the entire year with an injury. But that's a good team. That's a good basketball team. And to win that game, that's progress. And I got a lot of pushback from people saying, like, who cares? Like, we still suck. Yes, I watch this team too. I watch every game, okay? I know that we're still not a very good team. Like, we're not an especially good basketball team. We're fine. Like, I guess that's a nice thing I can say about us. Like, we still fight hard. We play hard. But, like, from a talent standpoint, we're okay at best. I would say fine. Like, I don't even, what are the different degrees? Fine, okay. We're somewhere there. We're certainly not a good basketball team. I cannot go that far. But what I can say is that we are making strides. We are taking steps. They might be baby steps, but they are steps nonetheless. Getting into the NIT, like I told you earlier in the week, that was a step. It might not have been the step you wanted us to take and that we ultimately want to get to, but it was a step. Winning this game, beating Xavier, was another step. Despite the fact that we almost blew it, I know we almost blew it. We've done that many times this year. In fact, if we hadn't blown all those games, we would be dancing. If we hadn't blown the game against Tennessee, if we hadn't blown the game against Alabama, if we haven't lost on the road to LSU by one and didn't play RJ Melendez for some inexplicable reason, if we hadn't blown the final possession with a chance to win the game against Florida in Gainesville, if we'd won those games, yeah, we'd probably be dancing right now. But yeah, didn't work out that way. So winning this game, finding a way, like how many times have you guys been frustrated with this team not being able to close out a game? All year, right? Like, we've lost count of those games. And even though we almost didn't close it out today or yesterday, we still close it out. We found a way. And finding a way, even if we almost gave it away, but finding a way to ultimately win it and come out on top, that's also a step in the right direction. We're getting better. This team regressed at times this year, absolutely. And we'll go through that when we do our full-on postseason recap of the entire season. We'll get to all that. But as a program, think about where we were 2 years ago. I know we didn't see a ton of improvement from last year to this year, but I would say this team is better than last year's. So I think the SEC is just better. And like, I know we blew some games against Tennessee and Alabama. Guys, we were not even remotely close to win those games last year. We were never good enough to be in a position to even blow leads like that against Tennessee and Alabama last year. So just being in that position means we're better, means that we're making progress. Now, we got to take the next step and figure out how to close those games, how to win them, so we can actually get to the big dance, which is where we all want to go. But winning that game was progress, man, and that had me excited. So I walked out of there. I was frustrated in the moment inside Stegman, but walking out of the Coliseum, I was excited, man. I was skipping around a little bit. Now, as for the game itself, there are a couple things I want to talk about. And we'll talk more about this again probably sometime next week when we eventually bow out of the NIT. But someone's going to have to help me understand why RJ Melendez is not playing more. The only possible explanation I can think to come up with is that he is like the biggest jerk of all time behind the scenes. And I don't know that. I don't know anything about the kid. Like, but why he is not playing, I simply, like, I can't make sense of it. Someone is going to have to explain that to me. This man averaged 18 minutes over the last 6 weeks of games. Over the last 6 weeks of the season. I remember he dropped 35 against Florida, right? In Gainesville. Almost single-handedly willed us back to win that game. He earned a couple starts after that. But then right after that, he plays, I think it was two games he started. He gets put back on the bench and starts playing like 15 minutes a game. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like, is he not practicing hard? Is he a jerk behind the scenes? Is he giving the coaches lip? Like, I need an explanation. I just don't understand it because this guy is one of the best players on the team. Like, I truly mean that. He is our best on-ball defender. He is our best rebounder. He is. Like, if you look at the numbers, rebounds per minute played, RJ Melendez leads the team. He's the third leading scorer on the team. He's one of only three players to average double digits on the season. But again, on a per minute basis, he leads the team in scoring per minute. He is clearly the best overall athlete on the team. He's awesome in transition. He's awesome in space. He's a guy that can finish at the rim with the best of them. He struggled to shoot the ball to open the season from three-point land, and now he's almost up to 30% when he was like 18% for a while. He's found his three-point stroke. He's been a weapon from there, but he's playing 15 to 18 minutes a game. Now, I will give Mike White some credit. He played RJ 22 minutes last night, which you go back because he played 25 minutes against Florida. But before that, 15 minutes, 12 minutes, 21 minutes, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 19 minutes, 16 minutes, 15 minutes. And there's, oh yeah, by the way, LSU, there was a donut. 0 minutes played. He made the trip, but did not play. So he wasn't suspended. If he was suspended, he wouldn't have been on the trip. But we chose to not play him in that game, a game that we lost by 1 point on the road at LSU. And who did we play in his place? We played Moncrief. Moncrief had not played like for 2 months. And we stick him in there, and God bless his soul, man. I'm not trying to pick on the kid, but I mean, and he didn't single-handedly lose the game. It had some horrific turnovers, and that led to baskets for LSU. And when you lose by 1 point, I think you can accurately say if RJ Melendez had played those minutes and not Moncrief, not M.A. Moncrief, we would have won that game. I don't think that's a stretch to say. So I don't know what's going on there. I want to give Mike White the benefit of the doubt and say like he's trying, like there's something going on there, practice habits. I don't know. It's just weird, man, because the dude can play. We are a better basketball team when he is on the court, and I just cannot make sense of it. And that's one of the things we'll talk about when we get to the full-on season recap of this basketball season. One of my biggest criticisms of Mike White all season, I think Mike White's done some good things. He's not been perfect, though. I think one of the things that he struggled with is his personnel usage. And I know like he tried to move the lineups around like when we started to struggle and he's trying to find the right fit. I get that, but I don't love how he's made use of his personnel. Like, we have talent deficiencies on this roster. Like he's not working with a full deck right now. I think he's trying to make the most of it. But RJ Melendez is a really talented player. Again, one of the most talented players on this team. And for 6 weeks, he averaged 18 minutes a game while we're going through this losing streak. And think about this, guys. He is, in my opinion, this is my two eyes, I believe that he is the best defender on our team, the best on-ball defender on our team. And again, the stats tell you he is the best rebounder per minute on the team. So for a team that consistently struggles to defend the ball and a team that consistently struggles to rebound the ball, especially on the defensive glass and has lost games because teams are destroying us with offensive rebounding, for a team that struggles with both those things, why are we not playing the guy on our team who is the best player on the team at both of those things that we struggle at from a team perspective? It's just, it's baffling to me. So I'm sure there probably is an explanation. I just don't know what it is, and I need it. Because if it's just because like you think he's not as good as the other players, like I don't have words for that. Like I don't know. I mean, I know Mike White knows a lot more about basketball than I do, the intricacies of the sport. But I mean, I watch a lot of basketball, guys, and I can see an athlete, I can see a good player when I watch him, and RJ can play. At 18 minutes, man, I don't know. It's been a source of frustration for me for a while. But moving on here, Silas Demery. I thought I had a really good game. Silas is really good at getting the rim, guys. He's a big body dude. His shot is coming on. He's shooting better. I think he can grow into a really good shooter. He's gotten better in that regard as the season has progressed. But I think his game is always going to be getting to the rim. Like the way he can finish at the rim with that size and physicality, I think he's going to be a problem for years to come. We have to keep this guy on the team. Now, the one thing that we struggle with, and this has been an issue for us, we know Justin Hill, he's just another guy, God bless his soul, man, plays hard. And I half the time I love Justin Hill, and half the time I'm like, oh my God, I want to kill you right now. That's how I feel about Justin Hill. It's like hot and cold with me, man. And when I get frustrated with him, it's when he just is out of control. He gets sped up, he panics and gets out of control. And he did some of that again last night. Late in the second half, against Xavier. And again, he's not the only guy that was having struggles, but turn the ball over, panicking like that, right? Like, what was it, under a minute to play? We were just trying to inbound the ball and get fouled and make some shots. Now, he missed some front ends. He wasn't the only guy to miss front ends, which that's a whole other thing. Missing front ends, guys, it's a hidden turnover. It's a hidden turnover. We missed three possessions. We missed front ends down the stretch. It would not have been that close if you just make your freaking free throws. We lost to Florida in Gainesville back in January because we couldn't make our freaking free throws. So that's... God, that's frustrating. But yeah, you know, he's holding the ball there right on the baseline and falls out of bounds. Didn't call a timeout. Didn't try to throw the ball off the defender. He kind of said, oh, I'm going to fall out of bounds. He like panics. He panics. Like he kind of loses it there. And that has happened far too often. But he does do some good things for us. He's a good ball handler. Like the thing about Justin Hill is he gets into the lane at will. Both Silas and Justin can do that. But the issue for us, and it's more so for Justin than it has been for Silas, so Silas is bigger and can finish over length better than Hill can, but Hill is smaller, and he has trouble finishing over length. And that's problematic for us because oftentimes we're playing with two bigs, at least in recent weeks we have been. Like when you have Russell Chiwa on the court along with a guy like James DeLoach, there is no spacing offensively. The lane is packed. The paint is packed because you've got Chiwa and DeLoach who are both no threat whatsoever to shoot the basketball. They don't shoot jump shots. They operate around the paint. So when we have two players, two guards, and Justin Hill and Silas Dimery, who's both of their best assets is getting to the rim, like getting in the paint, being their man off the dribble, and then trying to finish at the rim, well, it's harder for them to do that when there's all those extra bodies in the paint. If we had some guys that could stretch the court a little bit more and hit some perimeter shots, you could space it. And if Justin Hill beats his man off the dribble, which he does almost at will, consistently, there's not really any bodies there to contest the shot. He doesn't have to finish over anybody's length because nobody's there because we're spacing the court out. Well, we don't have the personnel right now to be able to do that, so it makes it much more difficult for Justin Hill to actually be effective at the rim. That's a problem. So that goes back to personnel. Like we've just got to get players that can help us space the court a little more. We got to get more shooters on this team. And then the other two freshmen have been they've been kind of down lately. Blue Kane, I love Blue. Blue's going to be awesome for us. Like he's been really, really good as a freshman this year. He hasn't played especially well lately offensively. Now the thing about Blue is he's a really good defender for a freshman. He is a good all-ball defender. He's a really smart, instinctive defender. He anticipates really well. He gets into throwing lanes or passing lanes and really kind of sees that developing. But he's been struggling offensively the last couple of games. Now, he played really well against Missouri. I mean, we were 6-12, 19 points. I think it was a career high, 19 points. But against Florida, tough night, 5 points. It was 2 of 8, 0 of 1 from 3. Last night, 2 of 6, 0 of 2 from 3. You go back to the Auburn game, the last game of the regular season. It was 3 of 9, 1 of 4 from 3. The Ole Miss, 3 of 8, 0 of 3 from 3. A&M, 5 of 12, 1 of 7 from 3. So he's been struggling with a shot a little bit with the exception of the Missouri game recently, but I have no worries long-term about Blue. I know the guy can shoot. I know he can play, and his best basketball is certainly ahead of him. And Dylan James, is, you know, he's kind of coming into a role now. He didn't play most of the year. He's a good athlete, can shoot a little bit, got a really herky-jerky shot, but he's a guy that can contest things at the rim, which, you know, with Chiu out there, with the final block of the game, which was awesome, by the way, by Big Russ, loved it. That play notwithstanding, he doesn't really give us much rim protection because the guy cannot get more than about 2.5 inches off the ground. So having got Dylan James out there with his crazy length, that gives us another rim protector at times. And he had a couple blocks last night, and he really kind of bothered some shots even when he didn't block them. So I like him. I think he's going to be a really good player. I need to see him be a little more consistent offensively, more confident offensively. I want to see him improve his handle a little bit and just be a little bit more aware on the court, but he's a freshman. Like you can say those things about almost any freshman out there. So I like those guys. I've been struggling a little bit recently, but they're going to be really good for us. But yeah, anyway, it was nice to get a win. We play a lot of guys. I think for the most part, everybody played pretty well. I mean, our guards were good for us. Thomas, it took a little while to get going, but in the first half, we needed him to show up. He showed up in the second half and he started hitting some shots, got more aggressive, and was looking for a shot a little bit more and made some big shots for us. Melendez was awesome off the bench, man. Like when he came on the court, like it changed everything for us. Offensively, defensively, he was lights out. 6 of 11, 2 of 3, couple rebounds, great on-ball defending, getting out in transition, creating breakout opportunities. So I just want to see more of him. We'll see more of him. But I'm excited for us to have the opportunity to continue our season and carry it on. And right now, it looks like it just went final. Wake Forest has defeated Appalachian State. I was hoping Appy State would pull that upset so that we get another home game. But we will be playing Wake Forest in Winston-Salem either Saturday or Sunday. I'm looking right now. That has not been officially announced. It'll be one of those games, one of those days, the 23rd or the 24th. So that's up next, Wake Forest. We've already beaten Wake Forest once. That's great. But this is a different story. It's all on the road. And they also are at full speed, full health, which they were not when we played them earlier in the year. But I want to say one final quick break here. And we get back from the break, we'll wrap things up with a quick little preview of the Georgia-Wake Forest game. All right, guys, let's wrap this show up with a quick little preview of Georgia-Wake Forest. Now, this game just went final, so I don't have any specific notes prepared, but I have watched Wake Forest play a lot this year, so let's just go off the top of the dome here. Wake Forest is a good basketball team. I think you could have argued that they should have been in the NCAA tournament. I think they were better than Virginia. They lost Virginia once. They beat them once. They lost to them once. But Wake Forest is a more talented team than Virginia. We all saw, I told y'all, Virginia sucks. And yeah, I wasn't lying. They're terrible. You all saw that last night. But Wake Forest is a good basketball team. Hunter Salas is their dude. Like, he's a guy that transferred from Gonzaga. I don't know what Gonzaga was thinking not playing this guy. They played a guy named Nolan Hickman over him, and Nolan Hickman's fine, but he's not Hunter Salas. He's not the scorer or the athlete that Hunter Salas is. Salas is a high flyer. He can shoot the three. He can beat you off the dribble. He is a big-time player. He is an NBA player. He is their dude. He is the top guy for this Wake Forest basketball team, and he is going to be priority number one, slowing down when we're trying to game plan for this Wake Forest team. Like, he is their number one option offensively, and it's really not even particularly close. And he basically doesn't come off the court. Like, let me look at their box score. Now, yeah, he played 40 minutes tonight. He rarely comes off the court because he's that important to them. But it's not just the Hunter Salas show. They have a couple other players. Like, they're good offensively. That's the thing with Wake Forest. They are good. They can score. They just struggle to defend. Another guy you got to watch for, their point guard, is a dude by the name of Kevin Miller. He averages 15 points a game. He's a 36% three-point shooter. He's a smaller guy. He's 6 foot, 175 pounds, Chicago kid. But he's a blur out there on the court. He does a good job distributing, and he can also knock down that three, the spot-up three. He can shoot the three off the dribble. Kim Hildreth is this British redhead dude. He averages about 13, 14 points a game. He can shoot a little bit. He shoots about 36%. I think he does a good job getting to the rim. He's not a big-body guy, but he's a physical player. But he's another, like, for a third option offensively, Cam Hildreth is good. And they got two big men they play. They play two big guys at the same time. They play Efton Reed, who originally played for LSU, then transferred to Gonzaga, then transferred to Wake Forest. He's the guy that did not play when we played them earlier in the season in Athens. And then Austin Carr is another guy. He's not quite a 7-footer. He's 6'10". Reed is a 7-footer. Both guys, big, long dudes. But Carr can step out and shoot the three a little bit. Reed will try to shoot it a little bit, but he's not really much of a three-point threat. But Carr is a 37% three-point shooter. So he's going to bring Big Russ out of the paint, and he'll try to take Russ off the dribble. So we'll see. I don't know how I love that matchup. Carr's not going to do as much backing down. He's going to try to he's going to hang around the perimeter, try to shoot the three on the pick and pop, and then he'll try to take off the dribble a little bit. And we'll see how Russ can handle that. I don't know if I love that matchup. And they got two guys off the bench that can shoot. They got this freshman named Parker Fredrickson, who is a three-point shooter all the way. That's what this guy does. He's a three-point specialist. He shoots like 39% from three. At points in the year, he was shooting 40%. He's a really good shooter. Montero's the guy. He hadn't been playing recently, but they've played him a lot. He's just a three-point sniper off the bench. But really, right now, the past couple games, it's been Fredrickson, and that's about it. They'll play this kid named Zach Keller a little bit. He's another big. Like, he's their third big. But he doesn't play a ton, and he's kind of just a body. He doesn't really pose much of a threat offensively out there. He'll rebound a little bit and kind of try to affect some shots at the rim, but he's not much of a player right now. One of the things that's going to be really important for us is to take care of the basketball, which we did a really good job of last night. We had single-digit turnovers. That's the big reason why we won that game. Xavier turned the ball over a lot, and we took advantage of that. We got some fast breaks, got some easy buckets. Well, Wake Forest will feast on turnovers. They have a bunch of good guards. They'll get out in transition, and they will finish, and they're athletic. So you do not want to turn the ball over. You do not want to give them as easy baskets, because it's going to be very tough for us to score with them. I have some concerns, because this is another team that is just more talented than us, and you guys know how that is fair. Like, we're not an overly talented basketball team. When we have played teams that are just more talented than us, we typically don't play. We don't beat those teams. We've come close against Tennessee and Alabama. We've pushed them, but we can't hold them off for a full 40 minutes. I know that people get frustrated. They're like, why can't we play a full 40 minutes? Well, we're trying, but those teams are just better than us, and it's tough for us to play over our heads for a full 40 minutes. That's what it takes to beat these teams that are more talented than us, and make no mistake about it, Wake Forest is more talented than we are, but so was Xavier. That was at home, though. So we have a shot to win this game. I would not say that we're the favorite at all. Wake Forest should win this basketball game, but Wake Forest also struggles to defend, and just like we do, especially on the ball. They struggle to stop the ball. They really do. So I think that both Justin Hill and Silas Demery, just like last night, can have really good games trying to get into the lane, beat the man with the dribble, and get to the rim and finish at the rim. That's what I think we're going to have to do offensively, because I think that's where our matchup advantages are, that they do have some bigs, and that does concern me. Because, like, again, our bigs, we don't stretch the court that much. That's why I would love to see RJ Melendez out there playing more at the four, because he can stretch the court. So Chiwa, we know he's going to be in the paint. It is what it is. But with RJ on the court, not only does he give us more athleticism, he also gives us more of a shooting threat, and teams have to respect that. Austin Carr, who would be matched up on RJ, that's a mismatch. RJ will beat him off the dribble, and you have to get him out of the lane. Like, that's what I want to see. Like, I know that I said a lot about RJ just in general earlier. I think RJ Melendez could be a key in this game in particular. I think it's a great matchup advantage for us to have Austin Carr defending RJ Melendez. And, like, if it's not going to be Carr, who's going to be? Efton Reed? No. Is it going to be this Keller guy at the bench? No, none of those guys. If RJ's playing the four, they're going to have trouble defending his athleticism. And if they want to get out on the perimeter with him, then they're going to open up the lane for guys like Silas Demery and Justin Hill to beat their man off the dribble, which I think they're going to be able to do consistently and get to the rim. That's the recipe for us to win this game. RJ's got to play like 25 to 30 minutes in this game, because Deloach is not a threat at the four to shoot the basketball. And I know that Dillon James is a little bit more of a threat, but no one's really respecting that right now. Not right now. He's going to have to hit some shots to make them respect that. But RJ, they're going to have to respect. So that's kind of how I would approach this. Don't turn the ball over. Stretch the core as much as we can. Space it out. Get RJ on the court. Get his athleticism and shot-making ability out there. And try to exploit some of the matchup advantages that we're going to have against that Wake Forest defense. And just, you know, see how it falls. They're a more talented team than us. I'm not going to try to tell you otherwise. They are. But that doesn't mean that we can't win. We haven't really beaten the more talented teams on the schedule. But doesn't mean we can't. And hey, again, we have beaten this Wake Forest team. It wasn't a Wake Forest team that was at full strength. But it was still Wake Forest-ish. But all right, guys, that's all I got for today. We'll be back next week with a lot more Georgia football spring practice talk. We'll recap week two. We have our opening spring scrimmage. I was thinking about doing a segment on the show today, like, here's what to watch during Georgia's first spring scrimmage, but it'd be very disingenuous. We don't know. Like, we haven't seen anything yet. We've only had a couple padded practices. We don't really know right now. Like, yeah, of course, I want to see how the backup quarterbacks look. Yeah, I want to see how the cornerbacks look. I want to see how the safeties are faring with Malachi Starks not being out there. How are the young linebackers playing? How is Monroe Freeling playing at right tackle? What's that left guard battle look like? There's a lot of things I want to watch, but we basically talked about all those things already. I wouldn't be telling you anything any different. So we'll just wait till we get some feedback, some news coming out of practice. I wanted to go to the coach's clinic. I usually go to the coach's clinic, but this year I was not able to make it a scheduling issue and just couldn't make it, but I have some buddies that are going, so I will be pumping them for some information. They'll be at practice on Thursday and Saturday, so hopefully we'll have some good nuggets for you guys on Sunday night show, recapping week two of spring practice, so make sure to come back and check that out, and we'll probably at some point next week have a full-on Georgia basketball 2023-24 season recap, because we're probably going to lose at some point in the next week or two. Hopefully not. Hopefully we make a run. If we beat Wake, we go to the quarterfinals, which will be played in Indianapolis at Hinkle Fieldhouse, which would be kind of cool. I actually, who knows, might make that trip if we can somehow find a way to upset Wake and win that basketball game. But if we lose, I hope we don't, but if we lose, we will have a full-on season recap for you guys next week. I know we've been teasing that for a little while, but we've just kind of been waiting for the full season to play out. But we'll get to that eventually when it happens. So a lot of great content for you guys next week. You know what we got you guys covered. So keep on coming back for more. Make sure you are subscribed to our YouTube channel. We've got a lot of video content that we've been putting out recently over the past couple weeks. Have a lot of big-time plans for that in the coming weeks and months. So get subscribed there. Watch those videos. Like, comment. We love the comments. We love the interaction there. And yeah, we always appreciate it, guys. So thanks for being here. We do appreciate that. I'm Tyler. Have an amazing weekend. Enjoy March Madness. And of course, as always, go Dawgs!